Welcome to Poems for People Who Hate Poetry, with your host, Kirk Barbera. Everyday conversations with life-altering poems.
You don't have to burn books to destroy a culture. Just get people to stop reading them. That's one of my favorite quotes in general, and it's by Ray Bradbury, the author of Fahrenheit 451. Now, I find the era that we live in particularly interesting because more than in recent history, we seem to be heading toward that kind of mentality. The mentality of don't burn the books, of course, like that's a very Nazi thing to do, but all we have to do is guilt people into not reading them. And so I wanted to create a little podcast here to help you read poetry that is probably considered today to be racist. I chose the poem Gunga Din for a reason that I'll explain later after I read the poem to you. But we live in a time where we are attempting very, very adamantly to destroy all literature, art, history of our past. People today are not allowed to talk about injustices of black people to white people. They're not allowed to, you know, if you're white, you have to feel guilty about the injustices of the past, you know, of white people against colored people. And we're not even allowed to acknowledge the realities, the journeys that individuals went on to go from a racist beginning to maybe having a little bit of questioning of that racism. And if you have that journey, which is something that many men throughout history have had, you know, even men like Thomas Jefferson, if you go through a journey of beginning with the cultural norms that, you know, for instance, if you're a white person, that black people are beneath you, that anybody who's not white is beneath you, that white is good and black is evil. That if that's the view that you grew up with, you have to go through a journey to get through that. And the fact that we are destroying our ability to do that is dangerous because what we're going to leave ourselves with is the only conclusion that racism is the only way. That's essentially what we're doing today. We're cutting off the building blocks necessary to go from a racist beginning or even like somewhat racist to a better understanding of humanity, which can only occur through literature. Only through literature, period. There's no other way to get it. You can get it a little bit through reality, through experiences, but you really need to see and hear and understand the journey that someone, that a soul can make of going from racism and hating someone just because of the color of their skin to going through that end conclusion that someone is worthwhile because you can judge them by the content of the character rather than the color of their skin. So I wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a guide by using Gunga Din, where the protagonist, the narrator, talks about the black-faced crew that would serve them water. And this is a military man and the British soldier during the 19th century in India. I'm not even calling it India. He's got his accent saying India. He might be Scottish or Cockney. I don't know anything about dialects at all, but he's got a pretty strong dialect. I did my best to not screw up the dialect, by the way, but you know, I'll let you be the judge of that. But the journey is this guy who beat, who ridiculed, who maimed, who kicked, who spit on, who, you know, made fun of this black-faced crew, which they called the Beastie. Not Beast-E, but like B-H-I-S-T-I. It's basically a slang for a type of person, who's beneath you, who served the water to the soldiers in India who were fighting a war against, you know, some other Indian tribes at that time and basically trying to protect the royal empire. And this soldier, though, is telling a tale in this, you know, he's like, you can imagine him at a bar and he opens up, you may talk of gin and beer when you're quartered safe out here and you're sent to penny fightin' and aldershot it. But when it comes to slaughter, you will do your work on water, and you'll lick the bloomin' boots of him that's got it. And basically what he's saying is, you know, he's a soldier, probably at a bar in London or somewhere in Britain, and he's saying, yeah, you may talk about having, you know, gin and beer right now, but when you're out there, when you're out fighting, water's all that you want. Water's all that you care about, and you'll lick the bloomin' boots of him that's got the water. You know, so this is a story about a guy who's out, you know, at war, and it's the story of Gunga Din, who's the water bearer. He's the water boy, essentially. But he, the man who relies on him, hates him, spits on him, ridicules him, beats him. And yet Gunga Din, this courageous character who runs out into the battle, who runs out to give water to these soldiers, who does his duty no matter what, he admires the British. He admires their weapons. He admires their stature. He admires their literature. He admires everything about them. And we don't know why. Because we're, you know, they're ridiculing him. They're beating him. And he risks his life. And he loves them. And they still spit on him. And that makes it doubly tragic, of course. And so what you get is this guilt that this soldier starts to feel, and I'm not going to reveal too much right now, but I wanted you to have somewhat of an overview of the poem, and then I'll talk a little bit more about it stanza by stanza afterward. But you see this guilt that goes on, and you go through this journey. But here's the danger. If we as a culture, if we as individuals, if you as an individual don't read racist literature, and I'll call this racist literature. He's making fun of Din. You know, he, for instance, there's definitely racist or race theorists today who would talk about the line, and for all his dirty hide, and for it goes, and for all his dirty hide, he was white, clear white inside when he went to tend the wounded under fire. Now, of course, the implication is that only white people are good and black people are not good. So when people are reading this today, and I've seen this time and time again in college, when people read this today, they pick on things like that and they say, well, you know, this white guy is calling all white people good and saintly and noble and all black people bad and evil and ignoble and cowardly. But if you do that kind of reading, if you just pick out, well, he says the word white, clear white inside, then you're missing the whole narrative structure of what's going on in the soul of this soldier. I mean, you're missing that journey that this guy's going on. And it's a journey that we need to respect in each and every single individual in America today and throughout all of history. Are there racist people today? Yeah, probably, without a doubt. Have there been racist people in the past? Of course. Have they all just been white people who hate black people? No, that's ridiculous. Anybody who's spent a lick of time reading anything about history knows that every culture throughout all of history hated every other culture. Black people hated white people. Black people hated brown people. Black people hated other shades of black. You know, brown people in India hated yellow people in Asia, hated white people and, you know, brown or lighter olive skinned people of the middle, you know, the Mediterranean. Like everybody considered everybody else evil or different or weird or barbaric or not of their norm. And this is, you know, white people did this to other white people based on religion. So the idea that racism is something new and that we need to, you know, just call people out and shut people down, which is what we do today. We, you know, on college campuses, we shut people down if they're racist. If you believe that a person who's speaking at a college campus or some intellectual that you disagree with, like a Ben Shapiro or a Milo, if you believe that these guys are racist, great. Okay. Then respect the journey and give them a little bit of evidence along the way. And one way to do that is through literature. If you are really interested, or if you care about your own internal soul or the soul of others, then you need to respect the journey of a lifetime, the journey that a soul goes through from beginning to end when they, you know, finally are trying to figure out and come to terms with the, you know, the thoughts and the norms that their parents and their culture gave to them. So when you think about racist people in the South, and they're definitely racist people in the South, just like there are racist NPR reporters that I've heard who are picking on, you know, normal, everyday white people and saying that they're guilty and they're part of some, you know, cultural power structure. It's ludicrous. But there are racist people in the South. And when you're looking at, let's take a racist person in like Charlottetown, Charlottesville. What you have is an individual who's been raised in a certain culture. And if you automatically say that they're evil, they're bad, they're horrible just for being white, then you're not respecting the journey. And this story of Gunga Din isn't really the story of Gunga Din, the water bearer, who is just who he is. He's a noble person, as you'll see in the story. The story is the journey that the soldier goes through, where he goes in there with these beliefs that he's superior, better, noble, because he's white, he's from civilization, he's from a better culture, which, you know, in a sense is true. He's from a better culture. It's a superior culture. It's got, you know, people live longer. They have, you know, technology, they have literature, they have other things. Whereas this, you know, black-faced crew, this beastie, B-H-I-S-T-I, has nothing. He's silly. He's dumb face. He has no, you know, skills. And yet there's nobility to him. And that's important. The way that the poem draws it out is that this, you know, silly kind of character, Gunga Din, who is basically a peasant, you know, he can't read, he can't, you know, he barely can speak. He's just this character, but he's got a nobility to him. And this is what MLK meant when he talked about judge the character of a man, the content of his character rather than the color of his skin. That was his dream, MLK's dream. And even before MLK, you have Rudyard Kipling, who's grappling with this during this empire of Britain that's all over the world conquering and, you know, controlling these lands. Today, we have to have respect for the journey. And that respect occurs in literature. So stick around. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read the poem, Gunga Din by Rudyard Kipling. Now, I have a feeling that some of the words you won't understand. I'll give you a couple of terms here to kind of help you out, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it afterwards. Like I said, the beginning is essentially he's telling the story of Gunga Din and how they're making fun of him, and they use, you know, terms like Pene Lao, which means basically bring water swiftly. You know, he says something like the uniform he wore was nothing much before. You know, he'll because of the accent, the dialect, he'll say something like arf a couple times, which means half. And then behind means behind and, you know, and back, obviously. And he talks about and rather less than arf, that behind, he's talking about his uniform for a piece of twisty rag. So if you, you know, picture just like a loincloth, essentially, is what Gunga Din, you know, is wearing. So it's very, you know, he's a very primitive person. He comes from the only word for it is primitive. Now, there's a term also, we shouted Harry by, which is spelled like the name Harry, H-A-R-R-Y, which basically means, oh, brother. So you hear stuff like that. Again, we'll go through some of this more when we go through stanza by stanza. I would highly recommend, if you can, you know, Googling this on your phone or something and reading along. If you're driving, then, you know, I do my best to go slow and kind of enunciate the words. And then you could always repeat the poem and kind of listen to it again. Also, when it in one of the last stanzas, it says, he carried me away to where a dooley lay. And a dooley is a simple litter. Basically, you know, an injured soldier, you'd put him on a litter like that, and you'd, you know, carry him out of the combat. Okay, so, you know, just stick around for the poem, and afterwards I'll converse with the verse, and we'll kind of dig a little bit deeper into the journey of the soldier in Gunga Din. You may talk o' gin and beer when you're quartered safe out here, and you're sent to penny fights and aldershot it. But when it comes to slaughter, you will do your work on water, and you'll lick the bloomin' boots of him that's got it. Now in India's sunny clime, where I used to spend my time a servant of Her Majesty the Queen. Of all them black-faced crew, the finest man I knew was our regimental beastie Gunga Din. He was Din, 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 you blimpin' lump of brick dust Gunga Din. Hi, slippy hithero, water get it, Pene Lao, you squidgy-nosed old idol Gunga Din. The uniform he wore was nothing much before, and rather less than arf of that behind. For a piece of twisty rag and a goatskin water bag was all the field equipment he could find. When the sweatin' troop train lay in a sidin' through the day, where the heat would make your bloomin' eyebrows crawl, we shouted, "Harry, bye!" till our throats were bricky dry. Then we whopped him 'cause he couldn't serve us all. It was, "Din, din, din! You 'eathen, where the mischief have you been? You put some jewelry in it, or I'll marrow you this minute, if you don't fill up my helmet, Gunga Din." He would dot and carry on till the longest day was done, and he didn't seem to know the use of fear. If we charged or broke or cut, you could bet your bloomin' nut he'd be waitin' 50 paces right flank rear. With his music on his back, he would skip with our attack and watch us till the bugles made retire. And for all his dirty eyed, he was white, clear white inside, when he went to tend the wounded under fire. It was din, 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 with the bullets kicking dust spots on the green. When the cartridges ran out, you could hear the front ranks shout, "Hey, ammunition mules, and Gunga Din!" I shan't forget the night when I dropped behind the fight with a bullet where my belt plate should have been. I was choking mad with thirst, and the man who spied me first was our good old grinning, grunting Gunga Din. He lifted up me head, and he plugged me where I bled, and he got me 1/2 pint of water green. It was crawling and it stunk, but of all the drinks I've drunk, I'm gratefulest to one from Gunga Din. It was din, din, din. Here's a beggar with a bullet through his spleen. He's a-chawin' up the ground, and he's kickin' all around. For God's sake, get the water, Gunga Din. He carried me away to where a dooley lay, and a bullet come and drilled the beggar clean. He put me safe inside, and just before he died, "I hope you liked your drink," says Gunga Din. So I'll meet him later on, at the place where he is gone, where it's always double drill and no canteen. He'll be squatting on the coals, giving drink to poor damned souls, and I'll get a swig in hell from Gunga Din. Yes, din, din, din. You Lazarusian leather Gunga Din. Though I've belted you and flayed you, by the living God that made you, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din. So again, it says you may talk o' gin and beer when you're quartered safe out here. So out here equals basically India, the colonies of Britain at this time. And then he says, you know, and you're sent to penny fights. Now, penny fight is an inexpensive boxing match, you know, which is greater than military skirmishes. And Aldershot, by the way, is a Victorian town. It's basically the home of the British Army. So what this narrator is saying at this moment is you guys are out here, safe out here, and, you know, you're going to see boxing matches, and that's how you're getting out your aggression, which is nothing compared to a real military skirmish. And then he says, but when it comes to slaughter, you will do your work on water, and you'll lick the bloomin' boots of him that's got it. In other words, warriors in combat need constant supplies of water. And when he says, lick the bloomin' boots of him that's got it, he's talking about it as in water. Now, this is, I've never been to combat. I hope I never have to be to go to combat. But one thing I've heard, and that's a common theme in literature and a common theme in history. And, you know, my dad was in Vietnam. It's something he talked about, like the water is the best friend, the best weapon of a soldier in a sense, because, you know, it's obviously the thing that keeps you alive, and you're exerting so much energy when there's combat. And, you know, water is an intensely important element in war, that the, you know, a full canteen is just as, you know, important as a full cartridge of, bullets. So the guy in this soldier is saying that, you know, you guys are here drinking safely, your beers, and you're having fun, and you're enjoying boxing matches. But if you were in battle, if you were in slaughter, if you were in combat, you would do your work on water. You would rely on water. So this is the story. He's setting up the tale that this is a story about a water boy. And, you know, he's already said that water's critical. And, you know, he says now in India's sunny climate, and I can hear, you know, social justice warriors today, like, it's not India. What kind of people call it India? You know, oh my gosh. And you hear all these tales today of how horrible Americans are, or not Americans, you know, the travelers at Columbus, where they came to the wrong place and they still called the Native Americans or the natives of this land Indians. And, you know, there's all this hubbub about that. And we're stuck on these kind of words where we can't read, you know, text of the past with just any kind of clarity and just kind of accept the words that they used to, this is what empathy is, just get into the mind of this soldier, this narrator, to really understand what he's experiencing. That's how he experiences. So if you pull yourself out of it, this is my point. If you pull yourself out of these older texts that weren't written in the last 34 minutes, you know, and so they don't have your context. If you pull yourself out of this text, then you've lost that empathy. You aren't able to get into the narrator's head. You aren't able to experience the world like him. And therefore, you lose the building blocks of the journey necessary to go from racist to questioning that racism. So he says, now in India's sunny clime where I used to spend my time, a servant, he says, a servant of Her Majesty the Queen, basically saying a servant of her Majesty and the Queen, of all them black-faced crew, the finest man I knew was our regimental beastie Gunga Din. Now, again, beastie is B-H-I-S-T-I, which was an Indian servant who supplied an establishment with water. That's it. And usually, you know, you can Google this to see the images, but he would carry it in a skin, like a water skin, usually made of like goat skin or something like that. It would be kind of, you know, in a can, the shape of a water jug, essentially slung on his back. And then, the next part of the stanza goes, he was din, you limpin' lump of brick dust Gunga Din. So they're ridiculing him. Limpin' lump o' brick dust. Hey, slippery hither how. Water, I don't know what hither how. I mean, I think hither how is just a you know, soldier's way of saying hither, like here, come over here, quick, boy. It's that kind of language. Water, get it, penny lao, which means bring water swiftly. You squidgy-nosed old idol Gunga Din. You know, old, you know, squidgy-nosed old idol. They're talking about racist slurs, like he's calling them squidgy-nosed. I mean, just think about racist slurs about people's physiognomy, their faces, and the way that each culture, each race, excuse me, is going to look different, obviously. And we, you know, I'm not going to go into them, but there's so many racist jokes about the size of noses of different races or the eyes of different races, or besides just the colors, which are clearly racist. So this guy is racist. He disrespects Gunga Din because of the color of his skin, because of his race. Now he's going to make fun of him a little bit because of the uniform he wore. The uniform he wore was nothing much before, and rather less than arf of that behind, rather less than half of that. For a piece of twisty rag and a goatskin water bag was all the field equipment he could find. When the sweating troop train lay in a sliding through the bay, where the heat would make your bloomin' eyebrows crawl. I mean, that's a great line, by the way. You know, make your eyebrows crawl, which, you know, if you've ever been in intense heat where you're sweating intensely, it kind of feels like your eyebrows are crawling because it just sweats. It's just like crawling in your eyebrows. We shouted, Harry, bye, which means we shouted, oh, brother, come here, till our throats were bricky dry. Then we whopped him. We whipped him because he couldn't serve us all. I mean, think about that. That's horrible. That's like, try to picture this scene. These guys are begging for this person who they rely on to survive. And then they whip him. They whip him because he didn't have enough room to bring water for the whole regiment in one turn. It was din, you heathen. Where the mischief have you been? You put some juldi in it. Juldi is kind of like, they're saying hurry. Put some gist behind it. Put some, you know, spunk in your step. Hurry up, boy. That's what they're saying. Or I'll marrow you this minute strike. So it's like I'll you know, hit you to your marrows. I'll hit you so hard it'll resonate in your marrows. If you don't fill up my helmet, Gunga Din. He would dot and carry one till the longest day was done. So he would go one by one by one and kind of carry this out until the all day long, without tiring, without waiting, without stopping. And he didn't seem to know the use of fear. Now, that's an important line. He didn't seem to know the use of fear. I mean, we're talking about a soldier where, you know, fear and honor and nobility, you know, fear is a part of that. And being courageous is one of the biggest values that a soldier has. And so here is an Indian, a black-faced crew, someone beneath the soldier who didn't know the use of fear. He wasn't afraid of anything. And that's the thing that I value the most is courage. And this guy's courageous. And then he goes on a little bit. So there's a little bit of a tide. Remember, he's not like completely, you know, on the side of Gunga Din in this element of the story and what's going on. But he says, if we charged or broke or cut, you could bet your bloomin' nut. Nut equals worth, you know, your savings. Basically, you know, if you want to take it literally, you know, think about a squirrel has a nut. So he's saying your bloomin' nut. But basically, he's just saying you could bet that this guy is going to be there. You could bet your life. You could bet your bloomin' nut he'd be waiting 50 paces right flank rear. So he was reliable. I mean, if you're a soldier, what more importance is there to reliability? I mean, if you can't trust your brother, if you can't trust the guy next to you, I mean, that's like the line. You're the man, you live for the man next to you, you fight for the man next to you, you die for the man next to you. And here is this guy, this black-faced crew, this stupid, foolish, you know, squidgy-nosed old idol with a loincloth around him, who's reliable and courageous, with his music on his back, his music is his water bag. He would skip with our attack. You know, he'd keep up with our attack and watch us till the bugles made retire, which basically, you know, retire obviously means stop fighting at that point. So he stayed till the end of the fighting. Now here's another important line. And for all his dirty hide, he was white, clear white inside. So again, like I said earlier, think about that for a second. He is going on, this warrior, this soldier, this white British soldier is going through this journey. And he's saying, man, you know, I have this view of this guy and I'm looking at him. He's dirty and savage. And by dirty, he's not, you know, this is a racist slur, clearly a racist slur. He's not saying he's dirty as in he hasn't washed, although he may have not washed too, but that's not really what he's saying. He's saying he's dirty because his skin is dirty because it's black. And he's white, clear white inside. So when you think about the journey, one of the challenges of, you know, seeing similarities of people is if we were to judge this story because of that line, right? You know, like I said earlier, that if we stopped reading and we said, this is so racist, I can't believe he would talk about this, this clear white inside, because he's relating himself. This is the journey that an individual soul, literature is individualistic. It's not societal. I don't care what people say today. It's not societal. It's individualistic. And so this is the man's honest journey. The only way that this individual human being could relate to a black-faced, you know, squidgy-nosed idol who's primitive and from a different culture and not as, you know, he doesn't seem as superior, and all of his culture is saying that he's better, that he's the rightful gods of the earth, and that, you know, they should have an empire from sun, you know, from the rise of the sun to the setting of the sun, that's the British Empire, and everything under it we will rule, just like we, you know, God said that man should rule the animals of the earth. I mean, that's how these guys looked at their role in the world. And so they're saying that this is basically just another animal that I should rule. And so to relate to this character, this human, this noble person that he's starting to see as noble, he has to see that just as he sees himself as noble, as good, as, you know, the courageous, civilized, intelligent, godlike creatures of the earth, and that he is not because he's black, now he has to reverse it in his own soul in order to come to a place where he can even come to the ability to question his racism. And by racism, I don't mean, by the way, that, you know, I should have said this at the beginning probably, but I don't mean the racism that we think of today, which is basically, you know, when people talk about racism, they say that it's a person with power over people who are powerless. That's not what racism has ever meant. And this is such a bizarre term today. Racism means that you judge another's colored skin someone who has a different color skin, or someone on a tribal basis, meaning I have a certain skin, you judge them as either superior or inferior based on the color of their skin. That's what racism has always meant and what it still means, despite what people may say. Okay, so, and for all his dirty hide, he was white, clear white inside. When he went to tend the wounded under fire, it was din, din, din with the bullet. So, by the way, I'm a terrible actor, but I tried to have a little bit of a different din, 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 because I think what Kipling is going for is that each time they yell for him, it's relaying a different type of, you know, thing. Like at first it's angry, you know, it's in the, and then it goes on to ridicule, and then it goes on to desperation, then it goes on to, you know, dying words, din, 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 and he's trying to survive, and, you know, din saves him. So it was din, 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 with the bullets kicking dust spots on the green. When the cartridges ran out, you could hear the front files shout, "Hi, ammunition mules," and Gunga Din. So, you know, the men cried out two things during battle. They cried out for more ammo, and they cried out for Gunga Din. Why? Because he has the water, right? That's how he established it in the beginning. Okay, so now the last two stanzas. Let's do the next stanza. So he says, "I shan't forget the night when I dropped behind the fight with a bullet where my belt plate should have been. I was choking mad with thirst, and the man that spied me first was our good old grinning, grunting Gunga Din." So remember, we set up this thing, he set up this thing at the very beginning, that the most important thing that to a soldier is water. And when you're injured, it's even more important. And you can assume by the talk that this guy has that Gunga Din has done this before. It's not the first time that Gunga Din has helped a soldier, that has helped a British soldier. It's not the first time he's done it. He's done it before. He's always helping soldiers. He lifted up, or it goes, he lifted up me head, and he plugged me where I bled, and he gave me half a pint of water green, and he gave me half a pint of green water. Green water is not good, but it's, and here's what he says, it was crawling, which means it was basically alive with vermin. In other words, it was like, you know, just the most disgusting water you could imagine, and it stunk. But of all the drinks I've drunk, I'm gratefulest to one from Gunga Din. It was din, din, din. Here's a beggar with a bullet through his spleen. He's chawing up the ground and he's kicking all around. For God's sake, get the water, Gunga Din. So the man turns from a noble soldier, although I have to point out that he does call himself a servant of Her Majesty, the Queen, which, you know, is an interesting idea that he is a servant and so is Gunga Din. It's just different kinds of servants. And he's on, you know, this is an era that's not the type of era that we live in today, which is a much more meritocracy, where everyone has a chance to, you know, rise to the top, where you can have, you know, a president that's, you know, black. And this is the era that we live in. But in his era, there were only hierarchies. And so it's even harder to fathom that someone below the hierarchy from you is better than you. Because then the implication, for instance, in his era, this is the 19th century, that he, as the servant of the queen of this nobility, which are, you know, he's white, they're white, but they're noble white. They're truly from a noble family. He's just a servant. He's just a soldier. And the implication is that he could be just as great as the queen, of the king, of the dukes, of the princes. So it's, you know, all the things that he's learned in his entire life, all of his social structure of what he's been raised in, he's starting to question this. Because he's saying, now at this moment, here's a beggar with a bullet through his spleen. We're equals, or I'm a beggar to you now. You're my superior, Gunga Din. I need something from you. You know, he's begging Gunga Din, bring water. And then he says, he carried me away to where a dooley lay. Dooley, I remember, is a simple litter that you'd put a soldier on, you'd carry him out. And a bullet came and drilled the beggar clean. He put me safe inside, and just before he died, "I hope you liked your drink," says Gunga Din. I mean, that's a powerful line. "I hope you liked your drink." I mean, Gunga Din is clearly a simpleton, but he's noble. He has his purpose on life, in life, and this guy kind of jokes that he has a purpose in all of human in all of the spectrum of, you know, life and death, in heaven and hell, that he's going to be you know, there with me in hell, and he's going to be giving me water. That's the next line he says. So I'll meet him later on at the place where he is gone. So he's saying that both him and Din are hellbound for the afterlife, but he kind of treats it humorously. And obviously, you know, it's another one of those things of questioning why would Gunga Din be in hell with him? But, you know, I'm an atheist, so I take this as he's just saying that they're together and it's about togetherness, not about the sin of Gunga Din. I don't think he's, you know, saying that Gunga Din is a sinner, but it's definitely easy to read this as though he's still living in, you know, the soldier's still acting and thinking somewhat in this culture of racism where, you know, people like Gunga Din don't get to go to heaven because only white people get to go to heaven. Like, that's definitely implied that there's a hierarchy, but both of them are going, they're going to go together, right? He knows where he's going. That's one of the key things. So even if he hasn't gone fully, you know, the soldier hasn't gone all the way to the social justice warrior of today that is so noble and so beautiful that he has no racism in his heart. He doesn't care about anything except, you know, the content of character, which I think is nonsense. He doesn't, you know, I don't think social justice warrior, anybody who talks about that today, you know, calls himself that today, isn't that. It seems to me. So he says, I hope you like your drink, says Gunga Din. So I'll meet him later on at the place where he is gone, where it's double drill and no canteen. So it's like you're in hell and you're drilling double times and you get no water. But he'll be squatting on the coals, giving drink to poor damn souls. And I'll get a swig in hell from Gunga Din. So again, you know, people are going to attack. People will definitely attack this idea that Gunga Din is just a servant. But remember, this is the hierarchy that the soldier lives in. It's all he knows. He doesn't know another type of way. He is a servant to the queen. Everyone is a servant to somebody. The queen is a servant to God. Like, that's the hierarchy that he lives in. And he's trying to question that. That's what's happening, is he's questioning it. And he's saying, you know what? We're both going to be in hell, but you're going to be serving just like I'm serving. I'm going to be tortured because I'm a horrible person. That's the last thing. He says, yes, Din, 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 you Lazarusian leather Gunga Din. Lazarusian, I believe, is leprous. So, you know, he's saying he's a leper, basically. Though I've belted you and flayed you, by the living God that made you, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din. So the discovery that this soldier goes through is that after all of this, after living in this hierarchy, dying in this hierarchy, being in hell in this hierarchy, the better of the two is Gunga Din. So he doesn't explicitly question the hierarchy, but he definitely starts to realize that Gunga Din is better than him. Gunga Din is superior because he's noble, he's courageous, he's reliable, he's all the traits that are supposedly only for white British Christians on Christian land, and they're pacifying the brutish barbarian. But here's a barbarian, the most and it's important, guys. I know it's hard to hear sometimes that, you know, these other cultures are inferior, but it's important to understand that Gunga Din has to be an idiot savant kind of a character. Because if he was a noble savage, it wouldn't have the impact. That's a common thread that you'll hear, read a lot about, is that you have this noble savage, which there are noble savages, there are noble people everywhere, but this, you know, by noble savage, a lot of times they mean, like, you know, intelligent to a high degree, well-read, knowledgeable about literature, you know, knowledgeable in all the things that the other culture is knowledgeable in. So if I'm, you know, a white person and there's a noble savage, he has many, you know, he's the best of the men of his society, and he's noble in his own right, as they would put it. And one way to think about that is that that's, you know, essentially two equals. Of course, the each one would think the other inferior. So the noble savage would think the white man or the black man or whoever they're, you know, if it's two black tribes meeting in Africa, it's, you know, each one would think that they're the noble person and the other one's the noble savage. That's how it works. And you would get this, you know, different vibe if that's what's going on, if it was another noble soldier that this narrator is meeting. So it's really important in the narration that Gunga Din really is kind of an idiot. He doesn't have a lot of intelligence. He's not to their level. He just does what he does, and he does it with, you know, a kick to his, you know, he does it with a spring in his step kind of way. And he loves the British people. We don't know why. It doesn't make any sense, but he does. And he's brave and courageous and reliable. All the things that, you know, a soldier would appreciate. And so this soldier appreciates Gunga Din. This soldier respects Gunga Din because of these things. And that, I think, is one of the most important elements of the journey. So the soldier is going on this journey from completely despising this person on the hierarchy, right? You have like Gunga Din is the absolute bottom of the hierarchy in this guy's structure. God is the top, and he is a servant to the queen, who's a servant to God. So remember, you have like this ladder. And, you know, now, but then he's confronted by someone on the bottom rung of the ladder. Like, he's in the middle of the ladder. The narrator's on the middle of the ladder. The Gunga Din is at the bottom of the ladder. Queen is toward the top, and God is, you know, the very top of the ladder. And he meets this Gunga Din, who throws everything askew. He starts to realize that he has all the values that I have. He's white inside, even though just like me, he's got the same thing. But even more, he's better than me. So how can I be at the top of the ladder or in the middle of the ladder? How? That's the questioning part. So this is not like the narrator is all of a sudden like a social justice warrior, whatever you want to call him. Like he completely thinks that everybody's equal and it's all la-di-da, but he starts to question it. And that journey is important. And one of the things that I fear is that we're cutting off the journey and we're saying you're evil if you have the inkling, the smallest inkling of, you know, thinking that another person is stupid, and you think that, you know, and you even portray a little bit of racism. Because that's what's going on today. We have so many people that are just attacked for even the slightest inkling that they might portray in a moment a racist thought. Which I think a lot of people have slight racist thoughts in different moments. You know, and by racist thought, I just mean like, oh, look at this stupid person, X color, right? Look at that stupid driver who's X race. Like, so many people have that on all sides, you know, and I think that it's important to understand the journey that is implied or necessary to get to the conclusion that you want. And when you start just calling everybody a racist, if they don't like, you know, quit their job to give it to a black person, or quit their job to give it to a brown person, or, you know, a brown person doesn't quit it to give it to a black person, or a yellow person doesn't quit it to give it to, you know, a brown person, or whatever it is, whatever type of thing that you're looking for, if they don't, you know, capitulate. And this is something that's happening all the time, where we're like a leftist professor, I don't remember the school, has to leave his or her job because he's white. I mean, that's racism. And so we're implying all the time that everybody is racist if you're white. And the problem is that if we, you know, start with that point, where we're going to say everyone's racist, unless you're, you know, the top of the rung. Like, so in other words, you know, and they're top of the rung, where like, if you're a queer, black, you know, little person, then you're kind of, you know, and you're missing a limb and you're somewhat mentally retarded, that individual is the top of the rung. That's the new God, the new queen. And the white person should be at the bottom of the rung. I mean, this is the new racism of our day. We have to put gender people at top if they're transgender or things of that nature. And this is what we're getting. And then the question is then, well, if we're living in a hierarchy, why is that the hierarchy? And what we need to be challenging is stop living in the hierarchy realm and let us challenge racism. Let us challenge racism at its roots, which means we have to appreciate where a person is. If a person is raised in this deep South where their mother and father were calling, you know, saying N-word this and N-word that, and then that person moves to like New York City, or that person moves, or they still live in that area, if you don't appreciate where they come from and you don't say, here's the journey of this soldier, here's the journey of this individual, and, you know, respect that person and show them maybe a piece of literature, then you're missing an opportunity and you're entrenching that person in their own thought pattern. Just as this soldier went through an experience and his mind started to change because he was in these dire circumstances, so can we use literature to help, you know, young people, to help teenagers, to help, you know, 10-year-olds, to help 20-year-olds, to help 40-year-olds even, if it's possible. I mean, this soldier was probably in his 20s at this point, at least. to help them on that journey, we need to stop slurring them. We need to stop slinging slurs and saying you're a racist because you're white or because of one little thing you did. Whether good or bad, or it doesn't matter. We have to respect the journey. And I hope that you enjoyed this journey of Gunga Din and Rudyard Kipling, and that you share this and talk to people about it. Use it as conversation. Was this a racist poem? I mean, there's clear racism in it, or is it a poem about, you know, regret and getting out of that racism? What do you think? What does it mean to you? How is a time in your life when you went through a journey? And can you appreciate that if you meet a racist person or someone you think is racist, that they're on a journey too? And that the worst thing you could do to that person is call them a racist and call them a hater of a certain color of another person, and entrench them in their thinking and say, you're right. There is a hierarchy. The only difference of your hierarchy, which is, you know, white people are at the top or brown people are at the top or whatever that person is. The only difference between your hierarchy and my hierarchy is that you're at the bottom. I mean, how is that going to solve anything? It's a journey, and you need to respect where they are to help them get to a point where they can see, you know, quote unquote, the other, whoever's different than them, as really the same, that we all have the same core, that we're all rational human beings, or at least capable of rationality. So I hope you enjoyed Gunga Din, and this has been Poems for People Who Hate Poetry.